Well, good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, we're going to open our first show of April celebrating the short but beautiful life of Anna Grace Marquez Green, who was tragically lost at Sandy Hook Elementary School. We're going to talk to her mom about April is for Anna, a month-long program of activities showcasing the Anna Grace Project, promoting love, community, and connection for every child and family they encounter. Then we're going to turn to the topic of breastfeeding with the representative of La Leche League of Connecticut, a volunteer organization committed to helping breastfeeding families achieve their goals. We're going to cover the benefits of breastfeeding for mom and baby, the group's recent annual healthcare provider seminar, Connecticut laws on the subject, as well as common myths about breastfeeding. Then we'll wrap up chatting with the very first mental health counselor with the Connecticut Community College System, who is introducing Fresh Check Day at Norwalk Community College later this month as a means of preventing suicide and breaking down stigmas against students with mental health concerns. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vocat, right after this reminder. There's always something wild going on at Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo. And since April 10th through 14th is school vacation week, the zoo is ready for your visit, providing special activities all week long. Then on the weekend of April 22nd from noon till 3, it's a party for the planet. Come celebrate Earth Day and learn about earth-friendly choices the Beardsley Zoo and you can make as a way of promoting better health for our planet while hearing about the zoo's conservation efforts. For more information about activities, catering, special events at the zoo, and more, just visit BeardsleyZoo.com. Well, as you heard in the introduction, we are so pleased to welcome back to the program Nelva Marquez Green. She is the mom of Anna Marquez Green, sadly lost to us at the Sandy Hook tragedy on 12/14. And as we come into April, the Anna Grace Project, which is the initiative that has sprung forth out of this tragedy, has initiated a fantastic project called April is for Anna. If you're interested in learning a lot of the details or how you can do come to work with this initiative, you can go to Anna Grace Project. That's ANAGraceProject.org. And Nelva, welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So there's a lot of really, really great stuff going on. And before we talk about that, let's catch up a little bit. It's been an exciting couple of years, year and a half since we visited last, which was right before you folks headed to the Grammy Awards for your husband, Jimmy Green, and his nomination for his album. And now I see toward the end of April is for Anna, there is going to be a worldwide release of a follow-up album.
You know, there is, and that album was inspired actually by one of Anna's closest friends here in Connecticut, who, after listening to the first album, she just kind of remarked, you know, I like this, and this is nice, Uncle Jimmy, but Anna was a lively girl, and this music is just not lively enough. So this second album, Flowers, really is more like Anna in its liveliness, in its song selection, and Jimmy really took that critique to heart and created something that was a little less about the circumstances of her death and more about the circumstances of her life.
Fantastic. And that album will premiere on April 28th, the worldwide release of Jimmy Green's CD called Beautiful Life, Volume 2, Flowers. If you'd like to learn more about that, you can go to Jimmy Green with an E. GREENE.com. So let's first focus on the incredible work that the Anna Grace Project and the Love Wins Initiative is taking in New Britain. This has sort of become the place where you're spending a lot of your energy.
New Britain is an amazing community with just an incredible amount of foresight and willingness to see, you know what, we want the best for our students, and we believe in the whole child. So it's a really good match for the Honor Grace Project. And as you know, a lot of our work was started by a local teacher there who really wanted to focus on social and emotional wellness in the classroom. So we went from one school, and then we went to two schools, and now we're in four schools. Next year we'll be in six until we cover all 10 elementary schools. That is our goal. And what we do is we offer clinical support for children and families, and then we also offer extension activities in the classroom for the teachers. So it's a really good fit. It's so honoring of not just Anna, but all kids and what they need, no matter where they are on the spectrum. And we're just enjoying the work and the partnership.
Well, people may be driving around now, perhaps anywhere in the United States, and they'll see a bumper sticker or some reference to Love Wins. And Love Wins is the slogan that was adopted by your family immediately after 1214. And as part of that project, I think one of the most important components is that it's not just for the kids, but an important kind of a tent pole to this initiative is the work that you're doing to support the educators.
You know, it really is. And one of the things that we know, whether we're working with the children, we're working with their parents, or we're working with the educators, is that relationships are really the antidote to trauma, or can be the antidote to trauma. So building communities where people aren't isolated, building communities where our educators feel supported, we put a lot of pressure on them, actually. We put a lot of expectation. There are so many demands. But if we can build trusting and loving communities where teachers can actually come and ask for help and say, you know, I'm struggling in this area, I just don't know how to deal with this particular student, or I'm just having a really rough day personally, then we all win. And yeah, it's one of my favorite parts of the work when we actually get to go in and support an educator.
And while with Anna's dad, Jimmy Green, being, of course, this renowned musician and educator himself, the Anna Grace Project is focusing on a wide variety of arts applications to engage these kids and help build community.
We have an endowed scholarship in her name at Western Connecticut State University. We support the CREC Anna Grace Academy of the Arts. Actually, a local Brownie Troop 50611 right here in Sandy Hook, every year collects and does a drive for instruments and tap shoes, right? Because the CREC Anna Grace Academy is a school where their primary intervention is the arts. So it's just beautiful and fitting, and to have the support from Sandy Hook go all the way to Anna School in Avon is just a really touching thing for us. And we get to also support, you know, her mission, her legacy, her love of the arts through this.
That's great. Folks, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Nelba Marquez Green about the Anna Grace Project, which was born as a response to the tragedy that took her life at Sandy Hook Elementary School. April is for Anna is a brand new initiative of the Anna Grace Project, and it has a lineup of activities that, as we said earlier, culminates in the worldwide release of Nelba's husband and Anna's dad, Jimmy Green's CD, Beautiful Life, Volume 2, Flowers. So April is for Anna. Activities actually got off to a pretty rousing start yesterday on Saturday, April 1st, with a great event in Danbury, which was called Dance for Anna with Love. So, Nelba, tell us a little bit about that.
You know, at the time of the shooting, I was working at Klingberg Family Centers in New Britain, Connecticut. And unbeknownst to me, one of my colleagues who was greatly impacted by this event and this loss wanted to do something in honor of Anna. And it started as one Zumba class, and it grew to, you know, 5 to 10 Zumba classes. And now it's grown to a community event with lots of different types of dance, which includes Zumba, salsa, African drumming, you name it. And it is a public celebration of Anna's life with the community through dance, through song. There are puppets they're giving out 1,000 books. It's just a celebration of Anna's life, and the Dance for Anna with Love committee has grown and grown, and it is their way. You know, we can't have a birthday party for Anna, and that is a tragic reality, but it is their way of allowing us to celebrate her life and have something. All the proceeds raised from this day go right back out to the community. We divide that up among our partner schools, and we get lots of sponsorships, and it's just a beautiful way to honor her life.
And where did the event take place?
This is at the CREC Public Safety Academy at 600 Slater Road in New Britain, Connecticut. And the committee just does a wonderful job at making it a family event with food and celebration, and it's just really beautiful. They collected over 1,000 books to give out so that every child who comes leaves with books. Sandy Hook's own Sensibility Project donated hundreds of scented aromatherapy medallions, so that if there are any children or families that need that bit of stress release in their life, they can go ahead and take one, and even take one to give out to others. So it's just really a celebration of life.
Great. If you are if you're listening and you happen to be anywhere in the area of Newtown or Monroe, going up or down Route 25 through April 9th, you can also help celebrate April is for Anna month by going to the Cupcakes for Anna promotion at D'Orazio Sisters Bakery. Nelba, tell us how this relationship came together.
Have you ever met the ladies of D'Orazio Sisters?
I have. I've had a couple of their treats, I must say.
They are the most amazing women. Two sisters, complete goofballs. All they do is laugh and eat and have joy, and they just make life better for others through their light. So I met these ladies, and I asked them one year very sheepishly, you know, is it possible that you would sell cupcakes in Anna's memory as a fundraiser? And they took her on as her own. And it's very interesting to me. These are two Italian sisters. I believe they're from Brooklyn, you know, very different than Anna's background. Anna was African-American and Latino. And when I think of my daughter growing up as an adult, I think she would have grown up to be very much like one of these sisters. Full of joy, full of love, full of light, and always willing to give back. So if you're at D'Orazio Sisters just picking up your Easter treats or, you know, your holiday or your weekend goodies, you know, if you want to pick up a purple cupcake for Anna, we'd be glad if you did so. And all the proceeds go to the Anna Grace Project.
Excellent. And if you want to figure out how to get to the D'Orazio Sisters Bakery, you can go to D'Orazio'sSistersBakery.com. D-O-R-A-Z-I-O-S-I-S-T-E-R-S-Bakery.com. Okay, moving on, there is the dance shoe drive that we talked about, of course, with Sandy Hook School's Brownie Troop 50611. If you'd like to arrange for a pickup of tap shoes, musical instruments, or other things, you could email deblombardo13@outlook.com. And then coming up on April 7th is the Newark Academy Jazz Concert and Benefit for the Anna Grace Project. Is that actually happening here in the state or in New Jersey?
That's actually in New Jersey, and okay. That has been led since year 2013 by one of Jimmy's college roommates, accomplished alto saxophonist and educator himself, Julius Tolentino. And at Newark Academy, they remember Anna by hosting a jazz night. And this year it will be on April 7th at 7 p.m. at Newark Academy. And actually, our surviving son, Isaiah, and our dear friends, Chris Allen and Jen Allen, also musicians in their own right, and their children, our children will be performing in this concert for Anna. So it'll just be a wonderful evening of jazz and music and remembrance in honor of Anna Grace's life.
Fantastic. Coming back home to the Sandy Hook neighborhood on April 4th and April 8th, there's Anna Grace Project Days at Figs a wood-fired bistro. Figs wood-fired bistro.net is their email address. So I imagine this is also a portion of the proceeds of sales going to the foundation.
Oh my gosh, they're so amazing. I can't tell you how thankful we are for the number of small local businesses in Newtown, Sandy Hook, who just go out of their way to still support families. It may seem like, you know, December 14th may seem like a long time ago to a lot of people, but when you lost a child or a beloved on that day, you know, maybe a spouse, it's actually not long at all. So we're just grateful for the Tartaglia family for making it so that our daughter and the project we're doing in her name can be remembered during those days at Figs. They put together a number of desserts. They have special menu items, and they just love and support our family. Anna's memorial bench is actually right outside the Figs sign right in Sandy Hook. So it's a very special place for us.
Good. Also on April 8th, Nicholas Sarambana and the Arts Collective at Yale University are doing a fundraiser. Give us a quick orientation on that event.
You know, Nicholas Sarambana was a senior in high school when he contacted me, and he said, you know, I was greatly impacted. Also a musician, a student at Yale, a student of actually Noah Behrman, a local well-known pianist in his own right. And he said, your work and your view on mental health have greatly impacted me. We'd love to do a fundraiser. And he's been doing fundraisers for the Honor Grace Project. This is his second year, and the whole day is focused on using music as a tool for social justice and awareness, violence prevention, and many other great things. And if you want to know more about Nicholas's event, it's nserrambana at gmail.com, and it'll be right on the Yale campus.
Excellent. And it is only appropriate that we finish up our conversation with you, Nelba, with an event called Finish the Race. And this is another day for children of the Anna Grace Project happening over there in New Britain. Tell us how this event is going to go.
I was a adjunct faculty member at CCSU at the time of the shooting, and they have for many years asked me, you know, how can we best support you? And based on the ask of a teacher in New Britain who said, you know, I would love for my children to be aware that there is life after high school. We want them to complete high school, and we want them to go on to higher education. So together with the partnership of CCSU and Fleet Feet Shoe Store and many donors, we make it possible for over 400 kids actually to visit CCSU for the day. Be treated as scholars. They are introduced to every academic department. They are greeted by the president, the new president, President Zulma Toro, and the mayor of New Britain, and, wow, and lots of inspiring. They get to do experiments with the engineering department. Last year, we got to make ice cream with dry ice, and it's just a day for our students in New Britain to know that there are people who care about them, who believe in them, and want them to finish the race. And we end our day on the track with the student athletes doing obstacle courses, kind of symbolic, and teaching our kids that they can, in fact, finish the race. So, you know, I can't send Anna to college now, but we can certainly encourage 400 other children that they can go. So it just honors Anna's life.
And that event is coming up on April 17th. All part of April is for Anna Month with the Anna Grace Project. If you'd like to learn more, it's anagraceproject.org. The Anna Grace Project was born as a response to the tragedy that took her life at Sandy Hook Elementary School. Her mom and dad, Nelba Marquez Green and Jimmy Green, have carried on with these fantastic initiatives, and really just a sampling of the great work that's been done so far and much more to come. I want to thank you, Nelba Marquez Green, for being on the program. And folks, once again, if you'd like to get involved, find out more or learn how to support both April is for Anna and the Anna Grace Foundation project, you can go to anagraceproject.org. Well, August is National Breastfeeding Awareness Month, but there is always a good opportunity to talk about breastfeeding, especially considering that the La Leche League of Connecticut is has just completed a fantastic, sold-out 30th anniversary healthcare provider seminar featuring Dr. Jack Newman. And we're so pleased to be talking with a brand new friend on the program who is with La Leche League of Connecticut. Anna Custer Singh is with us. So we're going to talk about breastfeeding and a little bit about that fantastic event, which just happened a couple of weeks ago. So Anna, great to meet you. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks for the opportunity, John.
So, first of all, let's break it down for folks who may not have heard of the organization. Tell us about La Leche League of Connecticut.
Sure. So, La Leche League of Connecticut is dedicated to helping parents breastfeed. That is our singular mission. We do that through peer support, education, and information. And it's really about connecting one-on-one with the breastfeeding parent and the breastfeeding family to make sure that they can reach their breastfeeding goals.
Mm-hmm. And what's cool about it is, I mean, for people that are just hearing about it now in terms of your organization as a support initiative, I remember way back to, I want to say 1976, when one of my high school teachers talked about La Leche League because his wife was like one of the regional leaders who held workshops and did outreach and helped women at that time. This organization has been around for quite a while.
That's right, and it's awesome that we hear those kinds of stories from folks. When I say I'm with the La Leche League, we hear those a lot from teachers and grandmothers and, you know, other people who have been through the baby world. But La Leche League International has actually been around since 1956.
Mm-hmm.
We've just celebrated our 60th anniversary internationally, and Connecticut has been right there at the table, continuing to serve these families for decades in the past and decades more to come.
Well, I have to say, being in a breastfeeding family myself when my child was an infant and a newborn, I have to confess I'm one of those people that, like if you tell me that you're pissed off about the politicians, but you didn't bother to vote in the last election or you don't vote. A lot of times when I hear, especially when it's friends or family members or someone that I'm close to and I care about, when they're having a baby and I hear from them that they're not considering breastfeeding, I kind of give them that same look as I do when they tell me after Election Day that they didn't vote. So let's talk about some of the misconceptions that may lead people to opt to not breastfeed while at the same time introducing and explaining to us some of the reasons why people should.
Sure. So we are really pro-breastfeeding, obviously, but we're also pro-family. And we think that the nursing parent is the expert of their baby. So whether they choose to breastfeed for 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day, 1 month, 1 year or more, we're here to support them in whatever those goals may be. If folks think that that's not for them, you know, maybe they've had medical issues and they think it can't be overcome, or they heard that there's a special diet that goes along with breastfeeding, that they're not going to get enough sleep. You know, we can talk about those things and make sure that they have the facts, because there are a lot of misconceptions about breastfeeding out there. But we really focus on making sure that people understand, you know, both the health benefits as well as the emotional benefits that come along for baby and for the nursing parent. And there are more and more things that are coming out all the time that breastfeeding is a good thing for, like babies who have breastfed have been shown to have fewer ear infections and less GI issues, less lower respiratory infections, asthma, and obesity. And for breastfeeding parents, there looks to be lower incidence of postpartum depression, as well as breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and type 2 diabetes. So there are some real tangible benefits, but there are also the intangible benefits that go along with a breastfeeding family.
Well, that's excellent. So how do individuals and when should individuals begin to learn about technique or the, you know, get the information that they need in order to most successfully move into breastfeeding once the child is born?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, sometimes the first time we meet a parent is when they have a crying newborn in the background of the phone call, and they're wondering if we can help them, and certainly we can help them. But what's really exciting is when we see pregnant mamas at our meetings, parents who come in and they are just looking for support and looking to kind of get a head start, because there's a lot that's not said about breastfeeding in this country. There's a lot of challenges still to normalizing breastfeeding, and we want people to know that it's perfectly okay to ask questions, that we want them to be informed as completely as possible, to answer their questions, no question's a bad question, and help them reach their goal. So when we see pregnant moms and support people who are coming to the meeting to start that kind of investigation as part of their, approach to parenting, then we're really excited about that, because if you educate yourself before, it's a little bit easier than just diving right in with a newborn. But they can also observe in the meeting other babies and other children who are breastfeeding and help them see what it's all about. You know, sometimes our media can be a challenge when we see the really well-rested, beautiful nursing parents sitting in the rocking chair looking so lovely. And when you get there in that first or second or third week of having a newborn, life isn't like that, and it can be a little harrowing at times. So we're really excited about having the opportunity to show people what it's really all about, make sure that they have the facts about breastfeeding, and trying to help get them off to a good start.
Well, having a coworker who literally whose wife just delivered a few weeks ago, there's a lot of conversation about the world of newborn parents. But I did find with this couple, as well as a number of others over the past 10 years, that younger families today tend to be so proactive and try to have as many answers and as much planning in place as possible, even maybe before they start working on getting pregnant. Do you find that more today than ever, you're actually seeing people reaching out to La Leche League of Connecticut who are just planning on getting pregnant?
We definitely have people through all stages of the breastfeeding relationship contact us, whether they're just thinking about getting pregnant and wanting to make sure that they've got information that they need to decide about breastfeeding for their family, whether they're nursing a newborn. Perhaps they're nursing a toddler and they're pregnant now again and they're trying to figure out if they're going to do tandem nursing, and perhaps it's time to wean, and they're having some challenges about that, and they want to talk to somebody about it and make sure they're being respectful to their child and themselves. We really do cover the whole spectrum. But you're right in that, you know, with so many information sources out there, there are a lot of ways that we need to be careful to make sure people are getting the accurate information about breastfeeding. And one of the things that La Leche League prides itself on is being evidence-based. So you might see certain things online in mommy groups that may or may not hold true for your breastfeeding experience. And certainly everybody's breastfeeding experience is a different journey. But when you're looking at, like, La Leche League, LLLI.org, our website, or you're checking in on our Facebook groups, you're going to be able to hear evidence-based, research-backed information about what it's like to breastfeed.
Excellent. Well, we are in an engaging conversation with Anna Custer Singh. She's with the La Leche League of Connecticut on the heels of their sold-out 30th healthcare provider seminar, which happened just a couple of weeks ago, back at the end of March, featuring Dr. Jack Newman. We're going to come back and talk about that seminar, some awards that were provided at that event, and a little bit more about what you need to know about breastfeeding and its implications in the Affordable Care Act, as well as some stats. We'll hear about the Connecticut Breastfeeding Coalition and hear a little bit about Dr. Jack Newman. We'll be back with La Leche League of Connecticut in just a moment. Stick with us. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. And if you work or volunteer with a state nonprofit, it's not too late. Visit the site to apply for one of our 2017 Love CT Foundation grants. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The all-volunteer blue-collar group Gimme Shelter was formed in January to provide funds and awareness for the need of a regional animal shelter in the Hamden-North Haven area. They have no overhead, so all funds collected go into Hamden's Animal Control Gift Fund to design, build, and staff a new regional shelter. On Saturday, April 22nd, Enchilada's Mexican restaurant in Hamden is going to be donating a portion of every check to the cause. The offer is valid for the restaurant, takeout orders, or in the upstairs cantina. The event starts at 4 p.m. with live music beginning at 6. For details, you can go to the Gimme Shelter Hamden Facebook site or click on Hamden, the letter R, dog.org. That's HamdenRDog.org. Well, thanks for hanging around. We are talking with Anna Custer-Singh. She is with the La Leche League of Connecticut, which just on March 30th held its sold-out healthcare provider seminar with Dr. Jack Newman. So, Anna, let's hear a little bit about the important information that Dr. Newman was imparting on the crowd.
Sure. We were so excited to have Dr. Jack Newman as our keynote speaker, who really focused on getting people informed, enlightened, aware about all the different updates and research that's going on in the breastfeeding community. You know, he is known not only here in the country, but around the world for his breastfeeding advice, and you'll commonly see him on the talk shows talking about things. So it was a real joy to have him here in Connecticut. And what's unique about our healthcare provider seminar is it's kind of a train-the-trainer program, if you will. We invite professionals in the healthcare community to come and get more information so they can be better prepared to go back to their staff, to go back to their medical practice, and to then inform their patients on what's happening with breastfeeding and breastfeeding challenges. So at this healthcare seminar, we have a mix of physicians, lactation consultants, folks who work for the WIC, the Women, Infants, Childs program, and making sure that they have accurate and up-to-date information about lactation and breastfeeding. Basically, any healthcare professional, including nursing staff, midwives, and others, who want to help support the breastfeeding dyad are eligible to attend our seminar. And it was just an amazing day to be a part of that community.
And a couple of them went home with some bling, I guess? Some awards?
Yes, our awards. It's always a special time when we can recognize healthcare providers who work so hard to help our breastfeeding families. We had two professionals that we recognized this year, Dr. Meredith Barrows of Hartford Area Pediatrics and Marie Peluto from Yale New Haven Hospital, where she is a lactation nurse and consultant there. They have some great stories, and when you read the nomination forms from their fellow professionals as well as from parents who have been helped from them, by them, it's really heartwarming to hear the dedication that they have, the kind of out-of-box thinking that they have to serve families, and really kind of exciting ways to collaborate with one another. Mm. Because, you know, you can't breastfeed in a bubble.
Right.
You're out in the community. You're obviously seeing a pediatrician. You might see a lactation specialist. You might have other children that you're caring for. And so we'll recognize these providers that get that and that also recognize the Leche League as a great source of referral and information is just a really validating part of our experience as volunteers.
Well, Ani, you said you can't breastfeed in a bubble, but here in Connecticut, you could pretty much breastfeed anywhere. So let's shift our attention to focus on the politics of breastfeeding and the law, and then we'll talk a little bit about any implications regarding breastfeeding and where the La Leche League stands with the potential revision of the Affordable Care Act, which, as we're recording the program, is on the docket to be voted on imminently. But first, let's go back to the subject I so ham-handedly introduced, breastfeeding in public. Here in Connecticut, it's the law?
That's right. It's actually the law in 49 out of 50 states, Idaho being the holdout. We've been happy to have the Connecticut Breastfeeding Coalition being an advocate for the rights of breastfeeding families in the public and private in the workplace to make sure that folks who are feeding their babies can do it whenever their baby's hungry. You know, if an adult's hungry, they don't mind eating in the car. They might have a snack as they're walking down the street. They might pull over real quick for a coffee or donut. But for some reason, folks still have some challenges with a mother being able to feed her newborn. And especially in the first 6 months or more of an infant's life, but at least for the first 6 months when human milk is the only food source that a baby is getting, when a baby's hungry, a baby needs fed. Mm. And so being able to have the right to breastfeed everywhere where a nursing parent and baby can go is incredibly validating and freeing. And, you know, on a day-to-day basis, most breastfeeding parents don't run into any issues. It's, you know, the big issues that we hear about sometimes in the news. But it's good to have it on the books so nursing families don't have to feel like their defense is up when they're just exercising their rights. Mm.
And there are some workplace implications as well under Connecticut law.
That's right. In Connecticut here, all breastfeeding parents do have the right to pump at work or express breast milk at work. And the employers must give the parent time to pump as well as a place to do so. And it's really between the employer and that employee to figure out what that dynamic looks like. Some groups have pump rooms. Some folks have part of a break room that ends up being a pump room. Sometimes there's conference rooms that are being used. There's all kinds of accommodations that can be made. Mm-hmm. If an employer wants to make it happen and be a female-friendly workplace, then there's opportunities to make it happen, even being designated a breastfeeding family workplace, which is something else that the Connecticut Breastfeeding Coalition works on.
Okay.
But we're definitely seeing more and more mothers returning to work and wanting to continue to feed their babies. So being able to pump and work at the same time allows them to do both.
Okay. Well, as we said, we are kind of in limbo here, the way the show works. Sometimes we do these interviews and then they are inventoried for a week or two. So we don't know as we're speaking right now for the recording how things are going to turn out with the possible revisions to the Affordable Care Act. But whether all of the proposals go through or nothing, let's just spend a minute or two before we wrap up the program here, Ana, about what the greatest concerns are with La Leche League in terms of the proposed revisions that were on the table literally as we speak during our recording.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's important to note that La Leche League is an education organization. We don't officially take advocacy standpoints in legislation like this. The United States Breastfeeding Committee is the organization that takes the lead and really makes sure that folks who are breastfeeding support proponents and healthcare providers are aware of what's going on. Okay. But there are two great assets that came out of the Affordable Care Act for breastfeeding families. One is that breast pumps were covered for the first time ever by insurance as a mandate, and that the second was lactation consultant visits could be covered. There are still challenges in some of those pieces on how it actually works. But from what we've been told so far, those two benefits have been preserved. But as you said, there's a lot of things that can happen in a conference room.
Sure.
So we're going to just keep our eyes on that. As I mentioned, so many women go back to the workplace. Some parents find that they want to exclusively pump or find it necessarily to exclusively pump. And being able to have that tool to feed their baby is really crucial. But when you have families that are making ends meet, being able to afford a $200, $300 pump out of their pocket can be really, really out of bounds for some families. So it was exciting to have breast pumps covered. We know that they weren't being shared among moms, that moms were getting quality, first-rated machines that their babies could ultimately grow and develop because of the milk that's being able to be expressed.
Very good. Well, in the last 30 seconds that we have with you, Anna Custer Singh, tell us how folks can get in touch with La Leche League of Connecticut.
Sure. So La Leche League of Connecticut does have a website, LLLCT.org, so La Leche League Connecticut.org, as well as a Facebook group, La Leche League of Connecticut Discussion Forum. You can post questions there, and leaders will reply to you as well as other nursing parents. Many local groups also have their own Facebook pages or websites, so online is the way it is. If you prefer old school, we still have a statewide helpline at 860-563-6624. That's 860-563-6624, or you can send us an email to help@LLLCT.org. We have nearly 70 leaders throughout the state with 29 area groups throughout the state, and as volunteer leaders, we are more than happy to help a breastfeeding parent, whether they're at a meeting, giving us a call, sending us an email. We just want to make sure they get the information that they can access so they can meet their breastfeeding goals.
Great. And if you're one of the thousands of families in Connecticut who have benefited through the information of La Leche League in Connecticut, or you've heard something on the show that's inspiring and you want to help them with their mission, they'd also welcome donations. Once again, LLLCT.org is the website. We thank you, Anna Custer Singh with La Leche League of Connecticut. Great show, very informative, and we'll talk to you again. Well, the last time we visited with somebody from Norwalk Community College, we were hearing about an innovative food pantry project that they were hoping to take statewide, not only on community college campuses, but on all Connecticut State College campuses. And lo and behold, now I get an email from yet another dedicated educator or staffer at Norwalk Community College. And I'm so happy to make the acquaintance of Lisa Slade. She's a mental health counselor at Norwalk Community College, and she is planning an event that is coming up on April 19th called Fresh Check Day. So we're going to find out all about that and why it's so important for folks to be thinking about Fresh Check Day and checking in with their college students wherever they may be. So Lisa, welcome to the program. Great to meet you.
Thank you, John. So happy to be here this morning.
So, first of all, before we get into the subject matter, which is tied to preventing suicide, a real critical matter, as folks who are regular listeners may know, and as I talked with you before the program, I'm a left-behinder from a suicide tragedy myself, and it's a subject that's near and dear to my heart. Tell us about yourself and your work at Norwalk Community College.
Well, my name is Lisa Slade, and I am actually a licensed professional counselor, and I work at Norwalk Community College, and I'm really excited about my role here. I'm actually the first mental health counselor in the Connecticut Community College system. So our president, Dr. David Levinson, was really proactive about extending services to our students to not just include academic advising and things like tutoring, but he also wanted to include mental health services because when the student comes to campus, you know, they don't just bring with them their books and their laptops and their smartphones and their homework, but they also bring with them their real-life issues in the world. And so our college campuses, and not just, you know, our community colleges, but our campuses all across America become like a microcosm of a student's real world. So if they have problems at home and if they're struggling with mental health issues or social issues or family issues, they bring that with them to the college campus, and sometimes those issues get compounded by just the academic stress of being a student and trying to balance all these things.
Right, and I guess, you know, based on talking to a lot of the guests on this program over the past 25 years that are engaged with mental health issues, clinical mental health issues, there are some really critical concerns that can begin to really take hold of young people when they're between 17 and 24 years old.
Absolutely.
So, you know, what are a few of the things that that you look for in terms of perhaps being able to head off not only the tragedy of suicide, but any of the myriad other ways somebody could go bad if, say, they're experiencing something like onset bipolar disorder?
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, one of the things that we recognize is that, you know, the college years, especially for a lot of young people, you know, can be an exciting time. But what we learned in an area of psychology is that this is also the time where we find that many young adults begin to experience the onset of mental illness. There's about 16 million college students who experience mental health issues on a college campus every year. And, you know, we find that that age of young adulthood is often the time for things like anxiety, which is probably one of the number one issues we see on our college campus, anxiety followed by depression. We see issues like substance misuse, eating disorders, some attention deficit disorder. Mm-hmm. So we see a variety of mental health issues that sometimes students come to campus with because maybe they were diagnosed while they were in high school, or, you know, they don't find out that they're struggling with these things until it's triggered by the stress of being in college. And it tends to come out more, and then hopefully they're able to get help, but many of them don't because they don't know what to do.
Well, that being said, I guess, you know, even if you're at a community college, you're probably not interacting with immediate family members, parents, brothers, sisters, as frequently as you were before you started going to college, even as a day student. Certainly anybody who is traveling or living at a college or university where they're away from home or in a dorm, that's even a greater concern because a lot of their peers, friends, and instructors and advisors don't have a history and don't know the behavior of this individual. So what are a few of the warning signs that either a student's peers or the professionals that they're interacting with predominantly need to look out for?
Absolutely. When you think about what some of the warning signs is, you know, oftentimes a student who is struggling with some mental health issue may experience difficulty just concentrating, trying to keep up with class, trying to go to homework. They may have poor class attendance. They, you know, may have difficulties in turning in assignments and handing in work. Things like they could exhibit a loss of energy and having issues like fatigue, sleeping a lot. We also want to look at things like their mood swings, you know, that's very important to notice. Changes in their hygiene, changes in their dress. Also, another important thing is any alcohol or drug usage. If if a person is maybe having unusual thoughts, irritability, maybe they're withdrawing and isolating themselves. Changes in their eating habits, maybe they're not eating at all, maybe they're eating too much. Changes in their sleep habits, maybe they're sleeping too much or not sleeping enough. they could be giving things away or making statements on social media. Nobody cares. This isn't worth it. Mm-hmm. You know, very dark. They could be saying very dark things, which might reflect that they're having some suicidal ideation of thoughts of hurting themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's important that that the people around college students, their peers, faculty, staff, family members, is that they pay close attention to their college students and try and, you know, be aware of any changes that might, you know, pop up and not be afraid to address them and say, you know, hey, how you doing? You know, are you feeling okay? You know, I noticed, you know, yeah, you know, you're not the person you usually are. What's going on?
Okay. And, you know, as the original mental health counselor for the community college system here in Connecticut, are you a resource? In other words, if an individual, if a student sees a peer, a friend, a classmate who might be exhibiting one or more of these types of behaviors, and they are reticent or uncomfortable with approaching the student, is there a mechanism by which they can approach an intermediary professional like yourself to possibly make an inquiry or intervene?
Absolutely. You know, and one of the things is I market my presence on campus a lot. Everything from flyers in the bathroom to email blast to our students and a presence on social media. So, you know, a lot of times what happens is the peers and the faculty actually walk students down to my office and ask me, can I see them? And I'm always available to see students. We know that even right now in the state of Connecticut, being able to access comprehensive mental health services can be a challenge. And there's no greater time than now for us to have a presence in college campuses. Students can come to my office and they can meet with me throughout the semester. And I also practice brief counseling with them. And sometimes they come and they just, you know, have some things that they want to talk about, you know, to get off their chest. Or sometimes they have issues that may be a lot more serious than that. And what I find is after a couple of sessions, you know, I'll do an assessment and we'll decide, is this, you know, something that we can handle here on campus, just, you know, in communication, or is this something that requires a higher level of care? And if it does require a high level of care, what I do is I have community agencies that I work very close with in the Southern Connecticut area, and I'm able to refer students over to a higher level of care. And oftentimes we've had emergency situations where we've had to coordinate services with ERs at Norwalk Hospital and at St. Vincent's Holbrook Hospital in Silver Hills for students who, you know, may have been struggling or decompensating, and we, you know, practice, you know, the professionalism, getting them to, you know, a much higher level of care and as quickly as possible. Right. So it's important to have a person like me on campus.
Well, in order to kind of take the resource that you are on Norwalk Community College campus and spread that to as many people as possible, you are sponsoring Fresh Check Day, which is a suicide prevention and mental health awareness activity that's going to feature food and games and prizes and, of course, suicide prevention, mental health and wellness information in a fair-like setting. That's coming up on April 19th from 11 to 3 p.m. at the West Campus Cafeteria at Norwalk Community College. And this is a fantastic event. We've got about a minute left. Is this exclusively for the Norwalk Community College community, or is it for the general public?
It is exclusively for Norwalk Community College students, but the wonderful thing about it is that we partner with this event with the mental health professionals in the southwestern Connecticut community. So there's a host of mental health agencies and programs that are going to be on campus, and they're going to be working with our students and having games and doing wonderful demonstrations and having a lot of fun while at the same time, you know, sending the message about suicide prevention as well as good mental health. And this is a bridge for our students to connect with people in the community so that they know that, you know, not only does NCC care about them, but there are people in the community that can care about them. And it's not that, you know, difficult to get help, because the Fresh Check Day program actually helps to reduce the stigma that's associated with mental illness and asking for help. So this kind of bridges that gap for between students and the mental health community here in the Norwalk area.
Great. Well, just like its groundbreaking food pantry, I'm hoping that Fresh Check Day is a check-in that's going to start happening at community colleges and other institutions around Connecticut.
We want to spread the word.
Maybe all because of you. Lisa Slade, mental health counselor at Norwalk Community College and the Connecticut Community College System's first mental health counselor, doing Fresh Check Day April 19th from 11 to 3 at the West Campus Cafeteria at Norwalk Community College. Great work, Lisa, and thank you. We'll be talking to you again soon. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scotts, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.